Securities and advisory services through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor member, FINRA/SIPC.
Good morning, everybody. Dennis O'Brien, Retirement Life and Investing Show here on 94.9 FM. Hope everybody's doing well. Wee-hoo! I got to take some Dramamine. These markets are going up and down and up and down and all around. Some of the numbers are pretty dramatic here. I've been watching it very carefully. A lot of money's come in, and I'm sitting on a ton of cash, and put a little bit in last week on the income side, but the millennial stocks I had stopped buying maybe 4, 5, 6 months ago because they started getting into the ozone layer, and I looked at the valuations, and we got a lot of new investors in the market, and you can tell when that happens because the valuations and things tend to get extended, and I knew eventually we'd get a correction. Timing these corrections, no one can do that. Anybody tells you they can do it, they're full of you-know-what. But I could tell it was coming. And I think the Fed, I remember a few weeks ago I made a comment, the Fed are idiots. You know, I don't really like to say bad words, and I don't think idiot's a bad word. But I knew the last rate increase was a bad one because the 10-year Treasury had not really gone up before they did it. It went up after, and I went, the Fed should never lead the Treasury market. The Treasury market should always lead the Fed because you have tens of millions of people making those decisions. Then the Fed can go up and keep the curve on a positive slope, not a negative slope. Well, something very dramatic happened this week, which you got to pay attention to. I do anyway. Stock market's been getting hammered, especially probably the most damage is in the tech area, the millennial stocks, which was it was due, okay? But what happened the last 2 days of this week is interest rates started dropping. So Mr. Powell, we call it the Powell plunge. Mr. Powell is the Federal Reserve chairman that Trump's been going after. And I noticed on one of the news channels, it's the Powell plunge. And when I saw the Powell plunge, I said, oh, that is clever. That is clever. That is clever. But in anything funny or clever, there's usually a little bit of truth to it. And I think the Fed has been pushing rates up faster than the market thought it should. And now the market, the bond market, because stocks have been weak, people run the treasuries. And when they run and buy the treasuries, the prices go up and the yields go down. Okay? And that's what's happened. And we've seen a big rally in the 2-year, 10-year. The rates have really gone down quite a bit for a couple of days. So that really tells me that this correction is soon to be over. And so get ready because when the midterms are over, traditionally the market really rallies. So get ready for that coming. The other indicator I'm watching very carefully is my buy-sell ratio. Now, my software, I have a big advantage because I have this program. It took me 5 years to learn. It charts almost all 8,100 companies, okay, every night and even during the day, okay? And one-to-one is even. That's when every buy, every sell, okay? This week, it got down to almost a 6-year low on the ratio, 0.07 buy-to-sell ratio, which means if you divide 7 into 100, that means for every stock going up, there's 14 going down. 14-to-1 negative ratio, which is almost as dramatic. The most I've ever seen is 25-to-1, which is 0.04 into 100, which is 25-to-1 negative. And that was in first week in October 2012, and I went, wow, wow, wow. And so we're approaching those levels. Will we get there? Who knows? Who cares? We're getting very, very close. We have an election coming. And because of that and all that dramatics, get ready, guys, because when it turns, it's going to turn quick, and you're not going to be able to time it. So you got to start easing your way in, I think, next week. I think next week. I'm not a short-term timing guy, but if you're sitting on some cash, and basically you have to have the same assumptions I have. Number one, we're on a higher growth plane. Number two, the Trump economic proposals have really helped the economy. It's created a lot more work for people. People actually have starting to get some buying power in the middle class in our country. We're seeing factories open up. We're seeing new companies coming public. Overall, don't pay attention to the day-to-day media news because it's all noise, okay? But overall, we're seeing a much stronger economy nationwide, okay? Now, the second thing that's been very negative and the market does not like with these higher rates is it makes the dollar stronger, okay? So a lot of this, China's loving it right now. Powell is their best friend. Let me explain why. China, anytime they get in trouble, they devalue their currency. It makes their goods much more competitive, all right? So it's cheaper when you bring it back to dollars, their goods, which gives them a huge competitive advantage. When Powell kept raising and raising the rates against all the other currencies in the world, okay, what happens? When he raises the rates, he makes our dollar so much more attractive because people can get 3% here, and in Germany they can only get 1%. So they're going to go here and get drove for the 3%. It's going to drive, they got to pay in dollars, right, to buy the bond. It's going to drive our currency up. It makes our goods much less competitive. And that's the real issue now with the market. It's because a lot of these multinationals, they're all over the world, okay? And with a stronger dollar, when they translate those overseas earnings back into dollars, the earnings seem a lot less. And the market does not like that. The Chinese are loving it because they can keep doing their sneaky devaluations. Powell is helping to evaluate our currency up and making us harder to compete with the Chinese and everyone else, but especially the Chinese. Okay? So Trump knows this, and that's why he's going after Powell, saying, cut it out. You're hurting me. You're actually helping our economic enemies. Okay? You're actually assisting our economic enemies. And for the reason for inflation, do you see any huge wage contracts coming through the line? Of course not. Of course not. You can go into McDonald's and Pawcatuck, and now they have machines where you just put in your order. You don't even give the order to a person anymore. All this stuff is going to go to robotics. So they're fighting the war from 20 years ago. Meanwhile, technology is going to keep wages and earnings depressed for the average person anyway because they'll just move to technology. So the Fed's fighting yesterday's battle, hurting us in our battle with the Chinese to get them to come and stop stealing our property and targeting our industries with state-aided, you know, things that they do, okay? And it's got to stop, and they got to wake up because this is what's going on out there. Anyway, that's my rant for the economic rant for the day, and thanks for listening to the segment. If you'd like my Retirement 10 Commandments or like to chat about your situation, give me a ring anytime or go to my website, www.obrienretire.com. We'll be back in a few minutes. If you'd like to call into the radio show, it's 860-464-9490. We'll be back in a few moments. Thank you. O'Brien, Retirement Life and Investing Show on 94.9 News Now. Hope everybody's having a good day. The nor'easter is ripping through, and hope nobody has any trees down. I think a lot of it went south of us, so maybe the wind won't be as bad. I think high tide's late morning, so keep an eye out there, and hopefully those along the coast there can get in and out of their houses. One guy was telling me that he's wondering. He says his house is up, but he's worried about the road going in because he's right. I think he's right off of, not on Mason's Island, but the road into it. So I hope he's doing well. Some of the things I want to talk about today are a little different than usual, okay? I've been thinking a lot about the old fable, the tortoise and the hare. Are you guys familiar with that one? I remember it from my childhood, vaguely. But very, very smart guy was once asked, what's the best investment book he ever read? And he said the tortoise and the hare. And that immediately got my attention because I was like, wait a minute, that's a children's book. And why? What does that have to do with investing? And that's kind of an odd answer because, you know, there's all these great investment books out there and you should read this and that and everything else, some of which I've talked about. So let's read The Tortoise and the Hare and see why that would be a good investment strategy. Once upon a time, there was a hare boasting how he could run faster than anyone else. He was forever teasing Tortoise for his slowness. Then one day, the inner irate Tortoise answered back, "What do you think you are? There's no denying you're swift, but ever you can be beaten. The hare squealed with laughter. "Beaten in a race? By whom? Not you, surely. I bet there's no one in the world that can win against me. I'm so speedy. Now why do you try?" Annoyed with such bragging, the Tortoise accepted the challenge. A course was planned. The next day at dawn, they stood at the starting line. The hare yawned sleepily at the meek Tortoise, trudging slowly off. When the hare saw how painfully slow his rival was, he decided, half asleep on his feet, to have a quick nap. "Take your time," he said. "I have 40 winks, and I'll catch up with you in a minute." The hare woke up from a start from his fitful sleep and gazed around looking for the Tortoise. But the creature was only a short distance away, having barely covered a third of the course. Breathing a sigh of relief, the hare decided, well, he might as well have breakfast, too, and off he went, munch on some cabbages he had noticed in a nearby field. But the heavy meal and the hot sun made his eyelids droop. With a careful glance at the Tortoise, not halfway along the course, he decided to have another snooze before flashing past the winning post. And smiling at the thought of the look on the Tortoise's face when he saw the hare speed by, he fell asleep and was soon snoring happily. The sun started to sink below the horizon, and the Tortoise, who had been plodding along to the winning post since morning, was scarcely a yard from the finish. At that very point, the hare woke up with a jolt. He could see the Tortoise, a speck of the distance, and away he dashed. He leaped and bounded at a great rate, his tongue lolling and gasping for breath. Just a little more, and he'd be first at the finish. But the hare's step was a little too late, for the Tortoise had beaten him to the winning post. Poor hare. Tired and disgraced, he slumped down beside the Tortoise, who was silently smiling at him. "Slowly does it every time," he says. I love that last line. "Slowly does it every time." Why did I just read you The Tortoise and the Hare? Why? Because it is a perfect example of how not to invest and how to invest. How not to become wealthy, be a hare, and how to become wealthy, be a tortoise. Okay? And the more and more I listen to the media talk about the correction the last, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks, you're listening to hares. They give the countdown, they give them numbers on these financial channels like we're watching a scoreboard on a game. Which I'm watching NFL or NHL or Major League Baseball or soccer. This isn't scoreboard stuff. Do you know that when you walk into Warren Buffett's office, a guy I know did a documentary on him. He says, you walk in his office, guess what's the first thing you notice? There's no computer. There's no stock quotes. He buys companies. Okay? He's a tortoise. He buys them and he waits and he waits. Meanwhile, the hares are running around looking for the quick buck. I had a 25-year-old come in the office the other day. All right, he's doing this thing online, you know. He goes, what? If this goes up 3 points, I'll sell. I go, don't do it. I go, you're acting like a hare. Be a tortoise. And he goes, what do you mean? I go, a tortoise. A hare goes around for the quick buck, looking for the quick buck, you know, the quick Mega Millions, right? We all do that. That's fine. Buy the fantasy. Spend $5, get it out of your system, but realize you're buying a fantasy. We have those fun conversations with everyone. But the tortoise, it doesn't go for the quick bucks. The tortoise is putting money in every month, quietly, waiting, building up, loves the fact that the market's correcting, loves the fact that he may be able to buy companies like Amazon and Google and Apple, and Facebook. All these millennium companies have come down. Some of them have come down 10, 20, 30%. And the tortoise is just waiting to buy them, slowly accumulating. All right? Never selling, but always accumulating. That's the tortoise way. That's my way at O'Brien Retirement. We're tortoises. The hares, lady came in the other day, very nice lady, Lisa, and she did one of these Facebook Live, and she says, well, what if somebody has $2,000 or $3,000 and they want to make it, they want to invest? And I looked at her and I go, we don't do that. She goes, what do you mean? I go, I don't have a minimum size account. I don't care how much money you have, but I want you investing like a tortoise every month, slowly and steady. Get $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, we buy this one. Keep slowly and steady accumulating. Get another one, buy this one. Well, the next 10, 15, 20 years, you're going to have a really nice portfolio, okay, with long-term capital gains, we hope. We've done a good job. But you're winning the long race, all right? You're not playing this fast, 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 okay? Now, the credit card companies and the people that want to bury you are counting on the fact that you're going to think like a hare and you're going to be like impulsive buyers. They want to trap you, okay? You don't want to fall for their traps. So tell your kids and grandkids, tell your spouse, tell yourself, whatever. You're not going to fall for the impulsive purchase, the impulsive buy, okay? Things will get knocked down from time to time. Let's face it, we're the only businesses when the store has a sale. We're the only business when the store has a sale here. People run out of the store. Every other store, they flock. You know? They're going to flock to Sears and in Waterford because the big sign's out front now. They're closing the Sears store. I don't know if they're having sales yet, but I remember the crowds in front of Toys R Us. But when we have a sale in the stock market, everybody runs out of the store except the quiet, smart tortoises. And let me tell you a story. I don't know if I told it to you, you know, when I first started. I don't really recall. But I remember I was with Advest in the early 90s, okay? And if you recall, the crash in 87 had come, and the markets were, so what? The Bush had taken over, and he was really not getting it done. And we were kind of in a quagmire, 91, 92. And I noticed all the regional brokerage firms, Piper Jaffray, Advest, there were 7 or 8 of them. This guy named Kellogg was buying them. And they were in the market. Everything was in the down the tubes. Everything was quiet. And I just watched this guy, like a tortoise, every month, every quarter, he was buying more shares. You know, he had to file, you know, his 10-Ks with the SEC every time he bought more and more shares. So finally, I got the nerve up because Mr. Kellogg was well known on Wall Street, and he was older at the time. He probably in the early 90s. He's probably in his late 60s, early 70s. So I called him up. I said, Mr. Kellogg, this is who I am. This is who I'm with. And I noticed you've been buying Advest and a lot of the regional brokerage firms. And I just want to ask you why. Because it doesn't look like things are very good for them. Discount brokers are starting to come on. They're saying the regional brokerage business is dead, blah, 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 blah. And there was a long silence. I mean long. I figured, oh, this guy's going to blow me off. He's an old rich guy. I was a young punk, blah, 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 blah. And he says, Dennis, he goes, thank you for calling, and I respect the fact that you took the time to call and had the bravery to do it. Well, I said, oh, good. Maybe he's going to answer the question. He says, the reason I'm buying is because of demographics. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, you got to realize the average boomer was born between 1946 and 1964. Okay? He goes, those boomers, the front end of those boomers in 46 are going to be turning 50 in 94. He goes, that's the max savings time. And then the group's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So he goes, he thinks a huge investment wave is coming. Okay? And I hung up the phone. I listened to him. I go, thank you, sir. I really appreciate you taking the time. You know, really, really respected him for taking the call. Hung up the phone, and I thought about it. And I just started digging in, doing some research. This is before the internet, by the way, kids. So you actually had to like go to the library and start pulling stuff up. And I looked and I looked and I looked and I said, this guy's right. There's a huge boom of people that are going to start seriously saving. Plus, a lot of the women had come into the workforce in the late 70s, early 80s. So you had that double thing going on. Plus, they had started 401ks in 1983, 84. So that was kicking in. He didn't even mention those. Okay. So what happened? That Advest stock, and I know that for a fact, which was trading between 2 and 3, he sold in 2000, 2001, 2002 at 32, 31, 30. Okay. Like a tortoise, he was looking out way ahead, buying into areas that he thought demographics, and this is wisdom. This is what comes with age. And he knew that he knew the wave was coming. He didn't know when it was going to start, and he was not trading short term. But he knew it was coming, and he was investing in that way. If you'd like to sit down and chat and bring your statements in and talk to me, go to www.obrienretire.com or call me at the office at 860-415-9614 or email me during the week at dobrien@ifgrr.com. Talk to you in a few minutes, and thank you for listening on 94.9 FM, the Retirement Life and Investing Show. Thanks. Welcome back. Dennis O'Brien, president of O'Brien Retirement Investment Group on the Retirement Life and Investing Show. We're trying to help you with your money, save your money for retirement on 94.9 News Now, a great radio station with great people. Thank you, everyone that helps. What is a stock market correction? You hear that term all the time, a correction. Do they stop talking and correct the diction? No, no. Stock market correction is when the market indexes reverse direction by at least 10%. Reverse direction is a nice way of saying going down, down, down. So a crash, I guess a crash could be defined by going down 25%, early 1929, 1987. I didn't live through the 29 crash. Sometimes I feel like I did, but no, I did not. What made the 1929 crash so bad? Why did the Depression get worse and worse and worse? What happened? Okay. And why did 1987 not half as bad? 2001, 9/11, not as bad. And what made 08, 09 so horrible and bad and everything else? And let's just do a quick review. I wasn't planning on talking about this, but since the market's corrected so much, let me share with you some of my thoughts. And feel free to chime in if you have your own. When I first came into business in 1980, I sold municipal bonds. I worked for Oppenheimer & Company, and I sold a lot of tax-free municipal bonds to New Yorkers, New Jerseyans, up and down the East Coast. The rates kept climbing. I remember at the peak, I sold 14¾ tax-free, MBIA-insured, Sam Rayburn, Municipal Power, Texas, to someone. I said, this is the absolute peak. The rates can't go up anymore. 14¾. I think the call feature was 10 years, so they couldn't replace your bonds with a lower yielding thing. Calls are very important when you're getting those high yields and everything else. So let's go back to the 1929 crash, okay? And what does that have in common, not have in common with what goes on today and whatnot? The 1929 crash came after the 1920s. We had huge growth, huge growth. The automobile had become mass market. Productivity was exploding. We had a huge new middle class that was buying Model T Fords. And the economy was humming. And along with that Wall Street eventually caught up and was humming too, and of course went to price levels that basically were unsupportable. What actually triggered the crash in 29? I'm not quite sure. Never really heard it. Like this year, it's October, and October tends to be the month when things tend to get hit. But the crash came, and the market went down, down, down. The difference between that crashes and the ones we've had since are huge, okay? What happened during the 30s was that we did not have FDIC insurance. So you could have $10,000 in the bank, which would have been a great sum in the 1930s, okay? But many times you couldn't get the money because the banks were illiquid and there was no insurance, FDIC insurance. So if you had a bank that was illiquid and you couldn't get your money out, you could swap your $10,000 bank statement for $2,500 real cash, and people were buying them like that in the secondary market. What that did in the 30s is it depressed the money supply. They estimate the money supply shrank 25% in the 1930s due to the lack of FDIC insurance. Okay? People couldn't get their money. They couldn't buy anything. Everybody went out of business. A lot of people went out of business. Okay? And they didn't know what to do because this whole idea of a capitalist society had come along, and these cars and industrial, our systems, our people systems, our governmental systems for financial controls hadn't caught up yet. Okay? So the major, major thing that came out of the 1930s was the FDIC insurance. All right? So even if your bank went out, the feds would come in, merge it with another bank quick, you'd still have your money. I think that insurance is up to $250,000 per account at this point. Okay? That is huge, because what happened was no matter what happened to your individual bank, you could still get your money. You could still go to the store. You could still invest or buy property or get to your money. In the 30s, when the money supply went down by 25%, everybody just kept their money in the cookie jar, the coffee, you know, they just kept it at the house. And that depressed everything too, because nobody was putting money in the banks. Nobody could pay anybody. It worked its way through the system. Okay. And it was huge. Okay. Let's go forward. And then you had Hoot Smalley and tariffs, and that nobody would trade with anybody else. And that indirectly led, in my belief, to the rise of the National Socialists in Germany and Hitler, when Hamburg, their main shipping port, went to 45% unemployment again. And he came in, and you know, the rest is history. Absolutely horrible, okay? 1987 came. Fed started raising rates in 1986 very aggressively. And by the time they had raised the rates six or seven times, I think they were hitting it at half a point. What happened was the yield curve had inverted. The two-year was higher than the 10-year, okay? And the last 20% was fluff in the stock market. October crashed, and it went down, you know, significantly. And it was a crash because it was more than, 25%. But this one went quick, and it crashed. And then it held out, and we had a bounce back. And then for 3 or 4 years after, what caused that crash? The Federal Reserve caused it. The change in tax law of limiting write-offs for property, investment property helped too, okay, and whatnot. But we didn't have a depression, and the reason we didn't have a depression was the money supply didn't shrink dramatically, and actually the Federal Reserve acted very quickly to increase the money supply afterwards, okay, and they had those tools. We had FDIC insurance, and things went well, okay. And things got better, okay? And then in the 90s, things started boom again, okay? Now, 1999, 2000 is a very, very weird period because long-term capital almost scared the devil out of the Federal Reserve in 98. The Fed was starting to tighten because we were starting to get boom period, and they were trying to tighten, control inflation. Long-term capital came along, really threatened the system, okay? And so the Fed reversed, cut rates three times real quick in late 98, early 99, All that money went into speculation, into high-tech stocks, which soared to levels never seen since, okay? And in 2000, it started to unwind. We had the double top in late 2000. Market started reversing again. 9/11 came, and then we went into a kind of a funk till March of 2003 when the market started coming out. Now, 08, 09 is a totally, it's probably the weirdest crash we've ever had because the Fed started tightening in 07 through 08. We had some initial bankruptcies. They did the right thing and merged them. And then in September of 08, in my view, and this is strictly my opinion, they made the biggest policy mistake Washington has ever made, maybe for political reasons, maybe not, but they let Lehman Brothers go into bankruptcy, a federal primary dealer, 7 weeks before the presidential election, which threw the election to Obama. We got 8 years of Obama. And the big thing was they blamed the banks, okay, which was they had their fair share of blame. But what they did was they tied the banks up so bad they couldn't lend for the next 8-9 years, okay? And so the money supply, the M1 money growth was so low as below one. So every dollar the Fed printed, it became less than a dollar because it went right back and was held at the Fed and they paid them, you know, 0.5% or 1%. They paid the banks not to lend money out. So the fractional banking system was turned off and they could not lend the money and it kept the rates very, very low. Obama raised the deficits from $10 billion to $20 billion in our national debt, but he was able to get away with it because they had turned the lending machine off. And it stayed very, very depressed, okay? And then November 16 came, and everything went out the window because it was a truly a different time, okay, and what's gone on since. So those are the three main crashes of my career, 1987, 2001, 2000, 2001, 99, and whatnot, and then 08, 09. So just to give you an idea of what I've seen in 38 years and what I feel, we'll talk about in the next segment, what I feel probably is coming. And so we'll talk about that. If you'd like a free review of your statements and go through your stuff with absolute confidentiality, please give me a ring or go to my website at www.obrienretired.com. I'm more than happy to send you my Retirement 10 Commandments and we can start to chat. Absolutely no charge for talking and reviewing your situation. Please give me a ring. Back in a few minutes, it's the Retirement Life and Investing Show with Dennis O'Brien, President of O'Brien Retirement Investment Group. Back in a few. Thanks. Dennis O'Brien, Retirement Life and Investing Show, www.obrienretired.com. Hope everybody's doing well today. It's a rainy, windy morning. A little nor'easter is passing through. But please stay safe, everyone. There's leaves on the road. It's very, very wet. So careful on those turns and those winding roads. They're so beautiful here in Connecticut in the fall, but they can be a danger also. So keep your speed down. And please, my pet peeve, do not tailgate. I hate tailgating. God, I hate it. Yeah, my car's giving me trouble. I got an 03 Mercedes with 153,000 miles on it. And every time I accelerate, I'm getting a real rumble. So I'm like, uh-oh, what's this? I hope it's not the tranny transmission, because you know and I know. That ain't cheap. The tranny's probably worth more than the car itself. But I love the car, so I don't want to sell it. I don't want to buy a new one yet. But who knows? Who knows what to do? You know, some people shy away from investing, thinking it's too risky. And although investing does come with some risks, not investing can also be a risk to your financial future. If your money doesn't grow, you could fall short when it comes to achieving your long-term goals, like sending a child to college or retiring. So I think in any case, if you can keep 3 to 6 months, say you got a $5,000 a month nut, that's what your expenses are a month, okay? Well, if you keep 3 months, that's 30,000. No, actually six months. 6 months times five is $30,000. So I think if you keep, you know, $30,000, $20,000 to $40,000 in the bank, some people say $40,000 to $50,000 in the bank, earning very little, but at least that's your safe money. But the rest you should consider, you know, trying to get a better yield on, I do believe. Now, a lot of you are coming in because you're inheriting money from your mom or dad who recently passed. You're getting these lump sums, and you're putting them in the checking account at the bank, and you don't know what to do, and you come in, we open an account. Now, I call you guys rookies because you haven't invested before, so we're going to be very, very conservative with you, okay? And we'll probably stress income at first and then see how you do with that and then go from there. Anytime I get a new investor, I have to look at what their experience was, what their investment objective is. You know, what are you trying to do? Are you just trying to earn a little bit more and not be too aggressive? Or are you trying to be more aggressive? I have some young couples that are putting away $1,000 a month and they want to be aggressive and buy different things. So it all depends on your background, what you're trying to do, because everybody's unique. Everybody's unique. And sometimes when you come in, you've been listening to me for a year, and dozens of you have come in, and you've been listening to me for a year, and you kind of know my philosophy, and you've decided you like it, and you've been looking for someone to trust, okay? And that's really what it comes down to. You're looking for someone to turn to that you can trust, okay? And I get it. So you decide you like me, you like my style. One guy said, hey, I really like your voice on the phone. I was like, hey, you're getting a little weird. But we joked around. He started laughing. So anyway, you come in, and what I've noticed is this has been going on lately. I'll say, okay, give me all your statements, and we talk for an hour or two. I go, let me study everything and get back to you and make sure if I have any additional questions. And some of you are coming in and saying, no, I want to open the account today. I know you. I trust you, and I want to do this and everything else. And be honest with you, it's like, okay. I'm not used to it because I'm trying to catch up with, you know, remember, radio is a one-way conversation. It's me talking and you listening, okay? So when you come in, bear in mind it's going to take me a little while to get going because, as one person told me, he says, you're the most unsalesy of any salesman I've ever met. And I said, that's because I don't have any products. I don't earn commissions off of products like annuities. What I am doing is, in most cases, charging a flat fee, no commission, and want to get to know you because I want to make sure that I'm fitting the right mix, the right allocation, the right diversification for you, okay? So it takes me a while to catch on. So if you come in and you want to open the account right away, that's fine. But I may have additional questions and want to ask you more things, okay? So just stay with me. I'll get there. But I have a way of doing things, and it works. But I do appreciate the dozens of you that have come in, called, and asked for information and started a conversation. Some of you are a year or two away, and you're starting early. I love that. I have no issue with that, okay? I will never bug you, okay? You can call me as many times as you want. You can ask me for information. I have no problem with that, okay? Because if I like you, all right, you can call me anytime, okay? If I don't like you, I won't. And most of the people, I have to be honest with you, it's like 98% of those that call in, chances are if they like me, they're kind of similar and we're kind of the same, you know, got the same values and whatnot. And actually, some of you have turned into really, I consider you very good friends. And I would do anything, you know, to help you in any way I can. And I've offered to help your kids get going and get everybody and the family on the same page. That's what it's all about. That is so rewarding on this side of the microphone to be able to help whole families all get on the same page, start talking about money, start planning about it. If you get married, every Saturday morning, have a 10 or 20 minute session. Let's review what we did for the week. How are we doing? Are we meeting our goals? Are we putting away money? What happened? What happened this week? Something bad happened? Did a car break down? did we have an account, a car repair account for that? These are the things, if you start talking about it and getting organized, the marriage will be stronger, your tension level will go down dramatically, and most importantly, you'll be teaching your kids, okay, to watch out for the credit card solicitations and all the bad stuff that's out there, okay, because the most profitable business in this country is debt. By far and away, GE went down the tubes when ML got rid of GE Finance out of his mind. Sears, for years, made money off the Sears credit card, okay? And they must have screwed that up, too. So, you know, it's like anything else. If you talk about it and get on their same page early, as a family, boy, you are going to help your kids and your grandkids, your spouse, your wife, your husband. You'll be much, much happier if all start pulling the oars in the same way at the same time. Really, really will help your families. And that's something that I absolutely love. I absolutely love to see that. And I will do anything I can in my power to help you and your family all pull the same way and get going in terms of getting that done. So my point of that is right now, last 2 weeks, we've had a 10% correction. Counts have gone down. You get your statements, they'll be down this month. Okay? But remember, the tortoise is planning for this. He's looking for things to buy. Okay? And I'm the same way. I've got a buy list, and there's things I'm looking at, waiting to buy, just waiting for that right signal, and then I'm going to start nipping away at it. I would love to see Mr. Powell say, you know what, I think we've done a pretty good job. We're going to lay off for the next 6 to 12 months. Well, if that happened and Mr. Powell, the architect of the Powell plunge, came out and said that, watch out, kids. We would fly. Because all the basis is there. The lower tax rates, the less regulatory. This is the greatest country in the world. Why do you think those 5, 10, whatever, 20,000 people are marching to this country? Why? They're marching to this country for a better life. Now, are some of them bad actors? I'll bet you there are, in any big group there are. But you couldn't think of a bigger compliment to this country to have people want to come here. They risk their lives for a better life. And I've talked to many of you. Many of you people have come from another country wanting a better life for you, but really for your kids. You want to stay here and you want to work, okay? But you got to do it legally. If you come here illegally, you're always watching over your shoulder. And it's not fair to the people that do come here legally. So come here. We want you to come. We want your talent. We want your ability. But do it legally. We really want you. One thing about Americans, okay? We work hard. But we are for the underdog. Because we're all underdogs at one point. I know some of you trust fund babies don't care what I'm talking about. But for the most part, I talked to an entrepreneur. One guy told me, you know, I went to his party one time. He had all these employees, successful guy and everything else. His wife told me, said, hey, first 2 or 3 years, we didn't know if we were going to be able to pay the bills. He still views himself as an underdog. And I love that about him, you know. So we want you to succeed. We want you to come, okay? We want this country to be even greater than it is, okay? But, you know, don't listen to the media. Everybody's trying to divide everyone else. Take everyone one at a time. The millennials, the young people that I meet, I mean, they are absolutely, don't believe the media character. They are absolutely the hardest working. They're smart with their money. And I think they're going to change this country through technology. I mean, the restaurants, they're opening up. The farm-to-table restaurants. Oh, the food is fantastic. I have learned so much from them and continue to do so because their innovation, some of them immigrated. Some of them are from this country. The ones I'm meeting, I have such positive vibes about our country based on these young people that I'm starting to deal with. They are smart. They want it. They want the country to do well. They do not like confrontation. They do not like people being divided. They want everyone to get along. They love our country, but they also want to travel and see the world and whatnot. And I really, really, really love that about them. Okay. And I've raised three of them. Two of them have gotten married. So we got five of them now. And they're starting to have babies. And I just love it. Love it, love it, love it. So, any case, if you want to reach out, give me a ring, 860-415-9614, or dobryan@ifgrr.com, or go to my website, www.obryanretire.com. More than happy to chat with you. I don't have any minimum account size. I do not care about that. I just want to make sure that you get where you need to go. Have a great week, everybody, and stay dry. Bye-bye now.